superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
If y'all ready for this draft, let me hear you say yeah!
This is the Rich Eisen Show with guest host Ryan Leaf.
When I was drafted, I told you I was doing this, and you're not coming along with me. And that's one of my biggest regrets to this day, that I didn't involve my home state and my hometown more in that success.
Earlier on the show, Pro Football Focus analyst Bruce Gretkowski. Coming up, Pro Football Hall of Famer Peyton Manning, 7-year NFL veteran Joey Harrington, Washington Post NBA writer Ben Golliver, plus actor Kevin Connolly. And now, sitting in for Rich, it's Ryan Leaf.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Rich Eisen Show. I'm Ryan Leaf, filling in for Rich. We are efforting Peyton Manning as our next guest. And there's a fun story about Peyton and I around the draft. I can't remember if this is draft or the Heisman, but we were doing a bit at TRL, and it was me, Charles Woodson, and Peyton. And we were just kind of standing there.
Nice, Carson.
Yeah, Carson. And we just kind of looked at each other because we weren't really being involved too much in the thing. And we just kind of looked at each other and said, hey, you want to get out of here? And we walked out right in the middle of Times Square. No one really knew who the hell we were yet.
Just a bunch of tall guys walking around.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of cool. It's one of my favorite memories. And we got him now. Peyton Manning joins us, Hall of Fame quarterback, 2-time Super Bowl champ. He's joining us now on the Mercedes-Benz Vans phone line. Number one overall pick in the 1998 draft. Hey, pal, thanks for joining me, man. This is pretty cool.
Hey, Ryan, thanks for having me, pal. Good to be with you.
Yeah, you too. Watching the draft 24 years later, what do you remember about our draft process in 98? What going into it and what you expected?
Yeah, it certainly is a lot different now, it seems like. Obviously, the actual draft day itself is completely different, right? We were in New York. I think there were four of us, if I recall.
Yeah.
I think it was me, you, Charles, and I want to say Curtis Enos was there as well, who got taken by the Bears. Andre Wadsworth wasn't there, and Randy Moss, who I think went 17, wasn't there. But you know, I just remember it being an exciting time. You know, obviously kind of curious about getting your first major job started, you know. And so I was kind of anxious, if I recall, just kind of, looking forward to, kind of making it official and getting to that team and getting the playbook and getting going. But it was fun being with you and Charles. Obviously, we've been together just a few weeks before or a few months before at the Heisman Banquet with Randy, and it was just cool, to kind of see everybody in that room, knowing that they were all going to be playing in the NFL any minute now.
You know, I want to describe to everyone who's listening, kind of the atmosphere around Canton last August. I had the honor to be there and celebrate your induction, which what struck me was the amount of former teammates of yours that were there to honor you. That had to feel unbelievably special in a very impactful and important night that they were there. That's the one thing that really stood out to me, and that says a lot about you as a teammate. What did you feel in that moment?
Well, I appreciate that. Like I said, I appreciate you being there as well. And to me, teammates are, kind of what it's all about. And it doesn't matter what level you played at. I had high school teammates there. I had college teammates, and I had teammates from Indianapolis and Denver. And once a teammate, always a teammate, regardless of which team you played with that teammate on. And it's just a special bond, knowing how hard you've worked to try to accomplish a goal, and maybe you've struggled together, maybe you've reached the pinnacle together, but it's definitely a special bond. And so that probably was one of the coolest things for me as well, to have all those teammates and different people that have been a part of your football journey all kind of there in one room. Everybody's all over the country now, you know, living life and doing different things, but to have them all right there in one room was certainly a special moment.
Yeah, it was fun to be there. It was neat to be a part of it. You and I were going to be linked on my end forever, regardless of the success that we had. And sure enough, you continue to impress. And you may be one of the most individuals that I would resent because of your success, but I can continue to watch you just be the epitome of what you want to be. And you and Ashley did something this week to honor your teammate Demaryius Thomas at Georgia Tech. Talk to us a little bit about that, the endowment that was formed for your teammate.
Yeah, you know, that Hall of Fame banquet actually in August was the last time we saw Demaryius.
Yep.
He was there, and, you know, Demaryius always loved spending time with our kids. They loved seeing him. He was great to them out there at Saturday practices when we were playing for the Broncos, or you know, down by the locker room after games. And it was great to see him, and just still haven't quite processed what happened in December, and just can't believe he's gone. But wanted to carry on his legacy and his memory by honoring him, but also paying it forward and creating a scholarship at Georgia Tech for someone from the same county as Demaryius to give them an opportunity to go reach their dreams. I mean, Demaryius' story is incredible, what all he endured as a young person, and then making it to Georgia Tech, and then being a first-round draft pick by the Broncos and All-Pro, you know, winning the Super Bowl. So you talk about overcoming adversity, and so to give someone else that same opportunity. But what's really cool, I think, Ryan, is that Georgia Tech kind of stepped up in, you know, in addition to Ashley and I forming the scholarship, Georgia Tech stepped up, and they're going to every August 8-8-8, which was DT's number with the Broncos. He was number 8 with Georgia Tech. They're going to hand out the number 8 jersey to one of their top senior leader players. That's somebody that just defines DT from a accountability standpoint, a toughness standpoint, an unselfish standpoint. And to me, there's a lot of responsibility that's going to come with wearing that jersey. So that will keep his legacy alive forever.
We're speaking with Peyton Manning, Pro Football Hall of Famer, 2-time Super Bowl champion. Transition from the NFL is tough for every player. I mean, regardless of success, you always feel like you could have done something more. And what's helped you with that? Because for people who are looking at it, it seems like a pretty seamless transition for you to a place where you have purpose and there's comfort in that. How have you gone about it?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's certainly a challenge, I think, as you adjust. You certainly miss, you know, kind of being a part of that team and being around 53 guys every single day in the building, you know, lifting weights and meeting together and, you know, traveling together to games. So it's a new routine, but you know, to me, you kind of find different teams to kind of be a part of, right? Some, you know, philanthropy teams and maybe some business teams and whatever it may be. But I think you still apply a lot of the same lessons that you learned in football about teamwork and communication and, you know, having a somewhat of maybe of a disciplined schedule, if you will, a lot of the things that you learn, right? I mean, football is all about schedules and, you know, being on time and being accountable that way. So, you know, Ryan, I've really tried to kind of take it one year at a time. You know, I've always been envious of some of these football players that always knew what they wanted to do, and they have these 5-year and 10-year plans. That's not me. You know, I've kind of tried to do a little bit of an evaluation each year to see kind of what I want to maybe do this year, what I don't want to do. But the main priority is having time to, you know, be at our kids, you know, baseball and softball games this weekend and help out with their flag football teams in the fall or tackle football, whatever it may be. And so that's been priority number one, but also trying to stay busy and stimulated at the same time.
Yeah, you introduced with ESPN this year the Manning Cast, and it's been a hit. You and your brother, you have a lot of fun with that. Tell us what that's been like a little bit. It's been fun to watch and see you guys grow throughout the year.
Yeah, no, thanks. I mean, I'm not sure. You know, sometimes I'm kind of on there, and I'm like, I chose to do this, and my brother is making various forehead jokes, or he likes to call it 5 head. So sometimes I wonder why I volunteer to do this, but it is fun to do it with him, Ryan. You know, we don't get to see each other as much as we used to, you know, living in Denver and living in New Jersey. So that's been a great way to stay close with Eli and, you know, and have something to work with him on. And then to kind of do it in a different way, right, to try to kind of gear toward, you know, maybe a younger audience of, you know, trying to watch the game as if you were watching it on the couch or at a bar with your friends, and, you know, having guests on there that love football in all different aspects of life, like Condoleezza Rice to Snoop Dogg.
Yeah.
The number one thing in common is that all those people love football, and I like being around people that love football and kind of hearing their stories. So we're going to do it again next year, and it certainly was fun to do.
Well, if you want to get back at Eli a little bit, let's just holler at me. I'll call Mom. She'll get the Heisman Trophy photo from our year with my brother sitting in between Cooper and Eli, and those haircuts and the outfits Olivia and Marcia put them in. That's a golden one for you.
Those were special. Those were special haircuts.
All right, I'm going to get you out of here. I appreciate you taking the time. This has been a lot of fun. What's your advice for Russ in Denver, right? After leaving a franchise so intertwined with his identity, you did the exact same thing. What advice are you giving him in this new direction he's going to be with in Denver for the Broncos?
Yeah, I've tried to be there as a resource for Russell if he has questions. I think Russell figures out a lot of these things because of his preparation and his attention to detail. But I have shared with him a couple things that helped me in my transition, and I've also shared that with the Broncos, you know, with Coach Hackett, who reached out to me and kind of had a bunch of questions. Hey, how can we help Russell in this transition? You know, it's a lot of little things, Ryan. It's, you know, hey, can you implement the same cadence that he had in Seattle, right? That's one less thing he has to think about. Any common plays that he really liked in Seattle, I would put those in the Broncos playbook, and Denver did that with me when I signed here as a free agent. I was, of course, coming off an injury, so that was on my mind. So that just the Broncos did a lot of things to help make the transition much easier, and I think Coach Hackett would do that with Russell. But he's all in. He's wired that way. He's already established himself as a leader in this locker room and, you know, with these young receivers, and I'm expecting big things out of him starting this year.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are. It'll be exciting to see that kind of quarterback play in Denver once again since your retirement. I'm going to let you go here. Before I do, though, I just it's been an honor. You know, you and I met on a phone call in 1997 because our SIDs thought it would be a good idea because we were going to be linked, and sure enough, and the rise that you had, the fall that I did, but no matter what, you didn't look at me any different, and that is incredibly meaningful to me and my family, and that's why I still consider you a friend, and I've loved to see your success over the time, you and Ashley and the family and everybody. So I appreciate you taking the time today, Peyton.
Well, Ryan, I appreciate the friendship and have great respect for you and your perseverance and keeping the faith, and it's been special to have you as a friend. And like I said, it's hard to believe we had that phone call back there in the fall of 97. And I want to say, I can't remember, I think it was the ESPYs, the Heisman, the draft, the rookie photo shoot. So a preseason game we played there in 1998 that was not very good football, probably on either teams. I was trying to avoid throwing interceptions in the preseason because I knew I was about to throw a lot in the regular season. But anyway, I appreciate you having me on, pal, and certainly wish you all the best.
All right, let's get some golf this offseason. We'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good, bud. Take care.
All right. Peyton Manning, everybody, Pro Football Hall of Famer, two-time Super Bowl champ, five-time MVP, and number one overall pick in the 1998 NFL draft. And a good man, guy that's been incredibly an incredible human being to me, right? Him and his family. I don't know if a lot of people know this, but he reached out and wrote to me while I was in prison. You have a similar story, Chris Brockman, when you were a kid in high school. You wrote to him.
Oh, man, I loved Peyton Manning. Oh. When I was growing up, I played quarterback in high school. I was extremely mediocre. And I wrote Peyton one year when I was maybe going to be the starter and asked him for some advice, what his favorite plays were, whatever. Obviously never expecting to hear back. And I didn't exactly hear back in the way that I wanted, but one day over the summertime, a big envelope from the University of Tennessee showed up at my house, and it was an autographed 8x10 from Peyton Manning. Personalized to Chris, Peyton Manning. It's still framed up in my mother's house to this day. It meant a lot to me then. It means a lot to me now. Obviously, a great player, great person.
The stories are plentiful like that. And the ironic thing is that the letter I got, I remember my roommate, he brought it up to me, and it's what I was doing at the time because I was in such a dark place. No matter what mail or correspondence came in, I didn't care who it was from. Coach Gilbride reached out to me, former teammates, and this is from Peyton Manning. And I just tore it up. Never read it. Still haven't asked him what he said in it. I don't know. It's just,
wow.
That's where I was at. But getting something like that, even though I reacted negatively to the moment of it, it bolstered me, right? It gave me hope. Hope that I didn't know existed, that ultimately got me to the place where I'm hosting the Rich Eisen Show and talking to my friend who had a Hall of Fame career, right? I mean, that's what building each other up as human beings is about. And so that was a lot of fun. So cool to have him on the show. Really good insight. Maybe he'll return the favor, and I'll do a little Manning cast maybe this year, talk a little football. We'll see. But when we come back, get to talk to another good friend of mine, former third overall pick in the NFL draft to the Detroit Lions, Oregon Duck, Joey Harrington, when we come back here on the Rich Eisen Show. We'll be right back.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hey, folks, it's time for the NFL draft, which means for me, I need a good night's sleep. Because if I don't have one, I'm just not myself. You know the deal. You know exactly how important it is to have quality sleep. It's a game changer for all of us. So Sleep Number helps me. My Sleep Number setting is 60. My wife's setting is 70. We both get a great night's sleep because we could adjust the firmness of our mattress on each side. Improve your quality sleep because Sleep Number learns how you sleep thanks to their smart beds and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Rich Eisen Show. Pretty cool moment there, doing an interview with Peyton Manning, and this is even an even cooler moment. Welcoming our next guest, number three overall pick for the Detroit Lions back in 2001, and president of the Harrington Family Foundation, Joey Harrington. Joey, what's up, buddy? How you doing?
I'm all right. And yourself?
I'm doing good, man. It's good to have you on the show. We had our boy Peyton Manning on just a little bit ago talking about the 98 draft, and I wanted to kind of ask you what your draft experience was like. You had a tremendous career at the University of Oregon, a ton of success, the Heisman campaign everybody remembers with Nike and in the middle of Times Square, and then the opportunity to go and play in the NFL. What was your draft experience kind of like?
Man, my draft experience was a bit surreal, to be honest, because it was never a... I don't want to say it was never a thought of mine, but it was always so far off in the distance.
Right.
And so almost unattainable, right? You look at the percentages, and it's, you know, 1% of the 2% who make it to college football, 1% of them make it onto the NFL. I mean, it's so minuscule that that moment was pretty surreal. And the thing that made it so great for me was, you know, back then they invited a couple of us to New York for the draft, but they said, you know, you're only allowed to bring 4 people, 6 people, or whatever that number
is. You know why that's the case? It's because my family, we brought 30 people in 98, and they were like, nah, that's not happening again.
Perfect. All right. So you're the reason.
Okay. I'm the reason.
Well, so anyway, they're like, you can only bring 5 people. I was like, man, I grew up in an Irish Catholic family.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way that I can only show up with 5 people. So I said, I'm going to stay home, and I'm going to watch it on TV over at my grandparents' house. And, you know, we had 16 first cousins, and then my dad is the oldest of 8, and then all the aunts and uncles, and then, you know, my college roommates. And so there were probably, I don't know,
100?
40 of us at my grandma and grandpa's house. And we're just kind of sitting around, and it was great to be around family. You know, there's such this hype and this, you know, just the crazy media attention around the draft, mm-hmm. that it was nice to kind of have this just calming, just foundation. I mean, I got picked 3rd overall, which, you know, then the draft started at like 9 a.m. So I was done by like 9:45.
Yep.
And then I went and played golf. So, you know, it was a pretty decent day for me.
It's a great day. And and watching that experience and seeing a lot of those experiences years later, it's something that I would have hoped I would have done and incorporated like my family and my hometown, something like that. We always see things different in hindsight. And one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was, like, I didn't see this coming, right? What were you aware of the expectations that would be, that would come with being taken 3rd overall? Because I didn't fully understand. I just assumed, like, I went to Washington State. We did something no one had ever done. People thought I was going to be the next Bledsoe. I passed that. And now I'm just going to do the thing in San Diego. I mean, did you understand what the expectations were going to be being drafted 3rd overall?
I think you kind of hit it on the head there, which is, I understood the expectations, but I expected perfection from myself.
Right.
Right. Because that's what had happened, right? You showed up at Washington State and you just went out and tore the conference apart. And it's like, well, yeah, of course, that's what I'm going to go do in the NFL.
Yeah.
We completely changed the face of Oregon football and made it a brand that people were starting to pay attention to. And I just said, yeah, sure, I'll go do that in Detroit. I mean, how perfect, you know, take a franchise that had been struggling a little bit and, you know, and we'll go remake the NFL. Well, so I showed up in Detroit. I'll never forget this. Walk off the jetway, kind of look around that first day, you know, the day after I got drafted. And I just kind of look around, and this guy walks up to me, like, immediately as I just, like, pass the ticket counter there. And he's like, hey, Joey, welcome to Detroit. I was like, oh, thanks, man. I appreciate it. Hey, you've got one of the 2 toughest jobs in the city, goalie for the Red Wings and quarterback for the Lions. And we haven't had a quarterback here since Bobby Lane in like 1958. Good luck, man. And he tapped me on the back and he just kept walking. I was like, all right, cool. You know, but that attitude and that expectation, absolutely existed from the moment we got drafted. But I definitely know that I didn't come into that locker room or that opportunity with the business mindset that is needed now.
Right.
Right. It is truly a produce on the field or get the hell out of the way. Right. I'm still coming from that college idea of, hey, let's build camaraderie and let's, you know, have team barbecues and we'll build this thing together from the ground up. And, you know, and then people start looking at you like, man, we got millions of dollars tied up right now. Produce right now, or we're going to find somebody else to do it. And that had never been my reality before. And I think for some, you know, I think that has become more understood now. Absolutely understood now. But people got to realize that this was that transition, you know, when you and I were, you know, kind of that, let's call it 95 to 05, right? kind of that transitional time before the NFL had truly become the massive, you know, billion-dollar business that it is today, where you can stream everything and, yep. and get instant access. There were still conversations on if you picked a first-round quarterback, should you sit him for a year or two, or should they play right away? Like, those were still legitimate conversations. So I don't know that I was necessarily prepared for that aspect like you talked about.
Would you have stood for that as the competitor that you are? I remember in that instance, like there was nothing stopping me from being the starting quarterback from day one. Like, that would have been a failure if I didn't get to that position.
See, I think it would have been the opposite for me, right? What was my strengths as a quarterback were never physical, right? I wasn't the biggest. I wasn't the strongest. I sure as hell wasn't the fastest. I had a good arm. I didn't have the best arm. What I did well is I studied and I learned, and I knew what the defense was doing before they did
right.
in college, right? I was able to, and those type of things were what inspired my teammates to, you know, to hop on board and say, all right, I believe in this guy. It's not because I could, you know, run a 4.5 or throw a ball through a brick wall. Like, that was never my style. And so I think, looking back, I would have benefited from sitting for a year and being able to take it in and learn and say, oh, this is what I could do in this situation, or this is how NFL defenses are different than college football. Because what happened to me is I got thrown into the fire, and I just kept getting kicked in the chin over and over.
I know that feeling, bud.
And I kept going back to the drawing board and saying, all right, let me try and fix it. But then when it didn't work, then I started doubting myself. And you know more than anybody, the moment you doubt yourself is the moment you are dead.
You're done in that NFL. at that level. Done. Yeah, done. And it's incredibly humbling when that happens in that moment. All right, we're speaking to Joey Harrington, third overall pick in the 2002 NFL draft, 7-year NFL veteran, and more importantly, the president of the Harrington Family Foundation. I really want you to kind of tell everybody about that, because I get to do a pretty cool thing with you at the end of June. You are having your 10th year anniversary of the Battle in Bandon. Tell our audience about the foundation and the event that we're going to participate in.
Yeah, so the foundation I started back in 2002 when I was drafted. I took my signing bonus and started the foundation. I knew that, you know, at some point I would want philanthropy or running a nonprofit to be part of my, you know, post NFL career. And, you know, long story, as I retired and started to figure this thing out, I came up with the idea of, you know, when people think of the foundation, they're going to think of me, and they're going to, you know, I was a quarterback, and a quarterback is a position of leadership, and I'm from Oregon, and I left, and I've come back. And so I came up with the idea of what I call community quarterback scholarships, community leaders. And so what we do is we look for graduating high school seniors from the state of Oregon, and we give them 4-year college scholarships, so long as they continue their education in the state. But our criteria has nothing to do with grades and test scores. It's financial need and community leadership. We look for those students who have invested in their community at a young age, have an idea, put it into practice. And then we reward them with a 4-year college scholarship and then a mentor from the community. I've put together a board of mentors that are truly experienced in all sorts of areas, whether it's healthcare, law, agriculture, entrepreneurship. And we give these students who frankly, whether it's financial access or geographical access, right? Rural versus urban or neighborhood access or, We help open doors,
right?
Because that's the thing, is like, there are thousands of kids out there who have the financial resources to get a tutor after school, and they get a 4-point, and mom and dad knows somebody on the board that, you know, or, you know, opens a door, and then they get their scholarship back east, and they end up, you know, with a internship on Wall Street, and they're pushing a pencil for the next, you know, 20 years, making $250,000, right? But so many of our students and so many of the people who truly are world changing got a C in their high school English class, right? Because they didn't care about Henry David Thoreau, but they were passionate about social justice, or they were passionate about STEM, you know, tech and science, and they want to use that to better their community. So we look for those students who've truly invested, and we open doors for them with finances and with mentorship opportunities. In the tournament that I've been doing for 10 years down at Bandon Dunes, the greatest golf resort in the United States, and yes, it did pass Pebble Beach a few years ago, is, you know, how many times did you, Ryan, get invited to a golf tournament, you know, when you're playing, you know, 173 times a year you get an invite, and you end up showing up to a course where you don't know anybody, and you're playing a scramble, and it's 97 degrees, and you don't want to be there, and, you know, it's a seven-hour round because they jammed the course. I said, if I ever did a golf tournament, I'm going to make it fun, and I'm going to make it a course where they want to play, and I'm going to actually play golf. So we go down to Bandon and play a series of two-man best ball matches. I get two guys from each school in the Pac-12, and we spend a weekend competing against each other on TV for a great cause, and in my opinion, a great cause, but it's fun, right? It's a chance for Washington State to play. You're gonna play a match against either Lawyer Malloy or Jake Browning, and you guys are gonna talk so much trash through that whole thing.
Yeah.
And we're gonna see who comes out on top, right? Who's gonna be better, the Huskies or the Cougars?
Well, we know the answer to that one already, but I'm super looking forward to it. I really appreciate the invite this year. Excited for that opportunity. Before we get you out of here, I gotta ask you about the draft and some of the quarterbacks. You know, this year only one quarterback went in the top in the first round, Kenny Pickett to Pittsburgh. What do you think about that? And did these teams just not be impulsive and reach too high and put a lot of expectation on a kid, but now can maybe settle for him in a position that gives him a chance to be successful?
You know, I think it was an interesting combination of two things. One, you know, there are a lot of quarterbacks, or I should say there aren't a whole lot of open, available quarterback positions, you know, teams that are in super dire need of somebody, right? There are a few of them in the NFL right now. But I think that this year's quarterback class was such that these are the guys that may need a couple years to develop, right?
Yep.
These are the guys that may turn into those guys that once you sit and watch for a year or two, then you get put into the mix, right? Remember, everybody, people have talked a lot about Aaron Rodgers, right? And, you know, all the stuff of the last couple of years with his contract situation. Let's not forget that Aaron Rodgers sat.
Carson 3 years.
Sat,
3 years.
Right?
Yeah.
These guys sat behind players and watched and developed into the type of player they are. The other thing, too, that's been really interesting, and this is a whole other conversation, but the NFL game has changed such that there is such a premium on wide receivers as opposed to running backs, right? Remember when we were playing, it was if you didn't have a 1,200-yard back, a 1,500-yard back, you were in trouble.
You were lost,
right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And receivers were a dime a dozen. You could pick a guy to catch six passes for 65 yards every game. Now the NFL game has changed to the point where teams are chucking the ball and they need that stud. And so it didn't surprise me that you saw, what was it? Six
of them,
receivers,
yep.
Taken in the top 20 picks. I mean, that was crazy. I mean, that tells me how much the NFL game has changed. You combine that with the AJ Brown trade, yes, with the talk of Deebo Samuel, you know, getting traded. I mean, this is becoming a wide receiver dominant league. You combine that with so many teams have their guys right now, and this crop of NFL potential quarterbacks maybe be in the group that needs to sit for a year or two, and I wasn't surprised that you saw six wideouts go and only one quarterback.
Yep, it's interesting. It's always fun to hear the insight from a guy that did it and did it at a very high level. Joey Harrington, everybody, 7-year NFL veteran, Oregon Duck, superstar. Thanks for taking the time, and I look forward to seeing you at the end of June, bud.
Man, always a pleasure, buddy. It'll be good to catch up. Thanks for having me.
All right, Joey Harrington. 7-year NFL veteran, number 3 overall pick in the 2002 NFL draft. Doing some great things, and I get a chance to compete against him. His partner, by the way, in the battle at Bandon is none other than Justin Herbert.
Oh man.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're gonna have some battles. We're gonna have some fun. USC's team, of course, Reggie Bush and Matt Barkley.
Why are quarterbacks so good at golf?
It's the same motion. The replacing the hips. It's the same motion. We've done it so many times in our life of throwing the football. It's repetitive. So whenever I see a quarterback that can't play, I'm like, what's wrong with you? Hockey players are incredible golfers, too.
I guess it's like pitchers, too. Kind of that same throw the hips out.
It's the replacing the left with the right. You love golf, and you notice, like, when you're turning, your turn, if you're doing it right, is you're turning, and then you're replacing that left hip with your right hip as the way through. Your right hip should really be pointing at the target eventually where you're going to.
Absolutely.
And so that's why it's a frustrating game for me because I will and never perfect it no matter how good I get. And that's why I keep coming back to it. And so Joey's put together a really great event for a really great cause. And I was really excited to get the call this year to be a part of it.
Again, if you need someone on your bag, I mean, I'm available.
We already know that this is the deal. You and I have made this deal.
We have totally made this deal.
Now, Peacock has the tie, right? NBC Sports.
Right.
NBC puts on the America Century Championship in Tahoe.
Every year.
My agents have been, you know, in conversations with it. And I know you're supposed to not try to, like, solicit an invite.
But we've
been trying for years. But. And I'm telling you right now, American Century, I could win the thing. And if I do get to go, if I'm ever asked to go, that guy right over there, he's on the back. He knows my game pretty well.
I know your game really well.
Yeah. And so...
so amazing to see the bond you two have created.
Total bromance.
Yeah.
It is.
Awesome. Well, it's golf. I mean, we've been trying to get you guys to play for years.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Just saying.
I need to talk to Rich about the NFL draft, of course. But I also need to talk about his golf because I want to join the club that he's in. That's what I want to do.
Don't we all?
Yeah. All right. When we come back, our namesake, Rich Eisen, joins us from Las Vegas. When we come back here on The Rich Eisen Show.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Our house is a mess. Come on in.
I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Rich Eisen Show. We've had a heck of a show, and we're not even close to being finished, right? We got our main man, Rich Eisen, coming up in just 1 second. Then at 11, or in the top of the third hour, Ben Golliver, Washington Post NBA writer. And then at the midway point of the final hour here of hour number three, friend of the show, Kevin Connolly, is going to join it. But let's welcome in our namesake here at the Rich Eisen Show, Mr. Rich Eisen, live from Las Vegas. Hey, Rich, how we doing?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing really well. I've had a fun show so far. I really have. It's.
How was Peyton?
Oh, he was wonderful. He was wonderful. We got to talk a lot of things, and I appreciate you this morning. You know, you've been a mentor of mine, and I just wanted some insight on how to go about interviewing some of these great players and stuff, and you were really helpful, so thank you for that.
It's all good, man. Thanks for doing what you've been doing.
Rich is still drunk after the Jets draft last night.
Yeah.
My God. Come on, man.
I am drunk.
We can't live in a world where the Jets are competent.
How would you have liked if you were like, let's just say you're some dude from Quincy, right? you save up all your time and your efforts to hop a flight from Logan to McCarran, the home of where Serrano once famously took the discs. You land here in town, you check in your hotel, you're just all fired up. Patriots at 21, they're going to pick.
Fired up.
You go to that draft hall, you drink all day, it's like 8 o'clock at night, you're kind of tired, you find out Bill's trading down at 29. Then they go ahead after all this time, the whole long trip from Quincy all the way to your hotel here in Las Vegas, all the way through to pick 29. And it's some guy from Chattanooga. You got to Google to find out who he is. It's just, you know, there was some dude in an Amendola jersey we shot. We saw that shot on NFL Network last night. He's just like looking around like, okay. Once again, in Bill We Trust, could have just stayed at home. Just stayed at home, you know, played a little bit of the scratch-off winners and kept coming here and putting your money down on a table, you know. Could have saved the time.
But if you're a Jets fan, you're glad you didn't stay home. Whoa.
Oh, my God. It's like the greatest weekend ever. Like, you should go and you should just bet everything.
Go see what the odds are right now since you're in Vegas of the Jets winning the AFC next year. What is it?
Oh, I wouldn't do that. No, there's safer bets.
Damn
it. No.
But hey,
I wouldn't do that.
Hey,
no,
come on. It's you got to feel that way. You got Jermaine Johnson at what? You got him at 26.
You just take 20 and put it down on your favorite Jet number, 12.
Yeah.
You know, for Namath. You know, go ahead. Just do that. That's what I would do if I, you know, had the ability to do that. As an NFL employee, we're just staring at the food menus around here.
What was the biggest shock for you last night on the coverage? You know, you're on air, breaking news happens. Was it the Marquise Brown?
AJ Brown.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Brockman, you posted it right away.
Yeah.
That you know, the soundbite that we elicited from Mike Vrabel a few weeks ago when he was on, and I asked about the rumors of trading AJ Brown, and he said, not as long as he's coached the Tennessee Titans, and he's still coaching the Tennessee Titans, and A.J. Brown is on the Philadelphia Eagles. And, you know, I know a lot of people are talking about what a great draft the Jets had, the Giants had, and, you know, the Ravens had an interesting night because they wound up with Kyle Hamilton at 14, and then they traded back in on the back part of the first round. But the Eagles, you know, trading up to go get Jordan Davis, who, you know, next to Fletcher Cox, as long as Fletcher's still there, will be a very difficult front for Zeke to have to get through. And they will have Fletcher's, if you will, replacement for years to come. And then use the, I guess, what was it, 16th overall pick in the draft or 18th overall pick in the draft for A.J. Brown and paid him. And so that's a heck of a night for the Eagles. That's for sure.
Do you find, and we've had this conversation here, and I kind of want to get your thought process on it. All these wide receivers that we're seeing being paid the bag of money, are being shipped off to places where the quarterback position isn't necessarily known. You don't quite know. I think Derek Carr, you do in Las Vegas. You know he's the guy, but people are always talking about it in Miami and now in Philadelphia with Jalen Hurts. The places that these quarterback or these players are coming from are the likes of Kansas City and Green Bay, where you have Hall of Fame quarterbacks. What do you think about those who are deciding to pay wide receivers and those who are deciding not to, but find that value in the draft?
We've been talking about that on the show for the last couple weeks. With Debo and A.J. Brown and D.K. Metcalf in their walk years. And we, you know, we're wondering who is going to pay a receiver who is entering year four, like a receiver who has put 7-8 years of top-notch play on the field,
mm-hmm.
like DeAndre Hopkins, Devontae Adams. I mean, Tyreek Hill hasn't been at it that long, but I think has shown, you know, next level ability and dependability. So who's going to go ahead and pay that receiver that type of money? And clearly we found out last night the Titans won't or are hesitant to for A.J. Brown, and the Eagles will. And, you know, you see whether the contract's worth $25 million annually or $21 million annually, depend upon whether it's an extension or not. That said, we're finding out if a team will go ahead and take somebody who is still very young, but still, again, young, in terms of what they've shown and pay them, or will they do what the Titans did last night, which is get rid of him and then draft his exact comp
right
as a replacement?
Yeah, and Daniel Jeremiah.
That's what they did.
Yep.
And the Jets last night, instead of acquiring Debo, it's not like it was their choice to not acquire him. I think they would absolutely have given up the 10th overall pick, as we discussed, for him and others. But the Niners, as I had said all week long, I just needed to see it to believe it, that they would trade Debo Samuel away, and they haven't. And now it will be one of those conversations to sit him down and say, what can we do to make this work? Because you're here. And I instead of doing that, the Jets obviously would have been great to get Debo Samuel, but they've got Garrett Wilson at 10, and the amount of money that they're going to pay Garrett Wilson over the next 4 years of his contract is what they would have paid Debo annually for just his
right.
first year
yep.
in a contract. So this is just an interesting way to take a look at, our receiver is going to be like the next, if you will, running back of the league. And we're beginning to see how the marketplace is hammered out.
Well, it's exploded, and it's been fun to see. All right, big night two. It was such a beautiful landscape. The optics of you four there with the fountains behind it, the way it was described. It was so fun to watch last night and see it play out. You could really hear it in your voice, the excitement of being there and the experience of it all. What do you expect tonight with the kickoff of round two? Do we see Malik Willis going quicker than we hope?
I don't know. Here's the way I think night two is going to be focused on, or what will wind up being focused on. The Ravens have 8 picks coming. So you're going to see the Ravens try and maneuver around, and it's interesting to see what they're going to do. Also, tonight is the night where Baker Mayfield could get traded.
Oh, yeah.
What will Carolina do? Are there other teams that might go through round two missing on the quarterback that they wanted? Will they go and flip a 3 and something in next year's draft for Baker now? How will the Browns handle his contract? If I'm the Browns, get him out. There's no reason to have him on your team for another mandatory mini camp for what? The summer? For real? Because if you go past this draft tonight's draft, then Baker's going to be on this team unless they cut him. So entering the summer, he'll be on this team. I don't think that makes sense for the Browns. And another thing tonight to look for is, will the Packers use any of their picks on a wide receiver after not last night? That's something I will have my eyes peeled for this evening.
You know, Daniel Jeremiah made points there when Green Bay was second, taking their second pick of the first round, that the value didn't fit to take somebody like Sky Moore yeah. or Christian Watson. Right. And, if I'm a Packers fan out there, I'm like, we need a wide receiver.
No, I know. Jordy Nelson was a second-round pick. I think, who else? Donald Driver. I mean,
Devontae Adams. Yeah.
You can get the value. And, again, we're talking about A.J. Brown, DK Metcalf, Debo. You can get that value or find that receiver tonight. I'll be keen to see if they do it. If they don't, well, then I would love to have a GoPro on 12 wherever he's sitting.
Yeah, me too. We're gonna keep talking with Rich Eisen here on TV here, but we'll be right back with Ben Golliver. All right, Rich, the hoopla around the draft and the players and how it's changed, right? Peyton and I were looking at our pictures from 98, 24 years ago, to what the spectacle is, the green room, the show up with the mirror and the hat, the hugging the commissioner, and then the outfits and kind of the swag. How is it covering that? And you've been covering them for a long time. How has it changed, and how cool is it to see it become such an extravaganza?
Like I said, yesterday, guys, I cannot believe. Like, I interviewed Roger Goodell yesterday around 2 o'clock our time here, and I started this interview on live TV saying I'm here with the commissioner of the NFL at an NFL draft in Las Vegas, Nevada. Something I never thought I would say ever. let alone into a live microphone on live television, standing next to the man himself. You know, it's the truth. And I asked him if this thing is always going to now travel. And he said, absolutely. There's no reason to not have it travel around like a road show, like a Super Bowl. Every year, showing off different parts of our football nation and a certain fan base. I mean, it's very rare. I've covered drafts. I never thought I'd hear the Chiefs get lustily booed in the draft hall when the Broncos are on the clock tonight. It'll be the first time we hear that. So it is pretty cool to see this go from town to town and just to see the players get into it as much as they get into it. I can't get enough of it. It was amazing to get off the draft set at 8 o'clock, 8:15 local right. time, and then just stroll around and the lights are going and it's Vegas and it's wild. So it's a nice dry run for the Super Bowl. And I think fans kind of dig it. Certainly coming here to this town, you look out a window and you see all the hotels in just one city block. There's more hotel rooms here than maybe the entire city of San Diego. So a city like this would absolutely crush a Super Bowl, and that's happening in 2 years.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's a great excuse to get away and be a part of it. We appreciate you jumping on again.
You got it, brother. Thanks for doing the show this week.
Yeah, you bet. It's always a pleasure. I love the opportunity to be a part of your platform. And
you got it, brother.
You have a great night.
You too.
We'll be right back here on the Rich Eisen Show. Talk to you.
See you Monday.
All right, bye.